Welcome to the Kill the Lion podcast. It's me, Cody Clark. We are back, baby, but who knows? Could be a long delay for the next one because I'm unpredictable and I'm always doing other stuff. I'm editing like two movies right now, so give me a break. But yeah, we got a great new episode for you today. Aubrey Ann Fuller is on the show, and she's an orgasmic meditation teacher, and she works with Eros and stuff, and I don't know how to describe it. She's just a lovely lady who knows a lot of cool stuff, and I enjoy talking to her, so had her on the podcast, and she's great. You're going to love her. Before we get to the show, of course, $1 a month. That's all I ask of you. KillTheLionFilms.com. If you want to send that my way, helps me make more podcasts, helps me make more movies, you know, or do stand-up, anything I like to do. Always a good opportunity with these things to remind people listening that you can help me do things. Dollar. That's all it takes. If everyone did that, I would be a bazillionaire. So, anyway, Kill the Lion Films. Support it. Anyway, here is Aubrey. All right, Aubrey. Good to have you on the show. Sorry. Is it weird? Is it too formal?
No.
It's not.
No.
Should I go more formal?
Maybe more formal. That might be.
Oh my God.
Soothing. No. Hi. Yes. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you. What are we going to talk about today? I feel like we could talk about anything because we always talk about anything. Yeah, I guess we'll just freeball this whole damn thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we met through my friend Maya, who I've known for a bazillion years. And Maya was like, you guys think alike, would get along. Let's put you all in a room. And we just kept being in rooms together and enjoying each other's thoughts and selves even more. So that brings us to the nth conversation of, oh, we should do a podcast. We should do a podcast, you know, so.
Yeah, I think I confessed I wanted to do a be on your podcast.
Yeah, I was like scared to ask because like, I didn't want to like, I don't know. It gets a little, because like we have such great conversations. I didn't want it to be like, you know, the old Michigan J. Frog cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to be like that.
I use that a lot in.
Really? I fucking use that all the time.
And coaching.
It's so useful.
Yeah.
It's one of the most useful cartoons mm-hmm. ever. I get so much out of that metaphor.
Me too.
Or simile.
Yeah.
Or example. I use it for all three.
For yes. Metaphors, similes, and examples.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's for those of you at home who don't know what we're talking about, the WB frog comes from a particular cartoon where it's about this frog that's like this amazing. It'd be funny if like I'm telling it and I get it completely wrong and you're like, you've been using that to teach people? None of that was accurate. No, he's this amazing singing, dancing frog. But the catch being that, like, when he does it, like, when, you know, he has to, he can't do it. He's just a regular.
He plays dead.
Yeah, he's just a regular ass frog.
Yeah.
Which is great because that's everything, right? That's better than fucking Aesop or Aesop or whatever, right? That's better. And Warner Brothers came up with it.
Cartoons used to be wild,
mm-hmm.
like, really wild. Yeah, I use it. I think I've used it for a bunch of things, but I think one of the main ones was for myself in talking about being able to do something when I'm in front of like one person or two people, like come out and express myself in a certain way in a small, you know, setting versus like I get in front of a public speaking situation and I'm like,
yeah.
Small dead frog or small normal frog just sitting there when I felt, you know, totally outgoing and charismatic with like three people.
Yeah, the way that I've encountered it mostly is I've used it to explain girlfriends and relationships I've been in, where, like, I've dated a lot of Michigan J Frogs. A lot of them.
Okay, but where were they the singing and dancing version, and where were they the...
Well, they were just... There's something that's so perfectly performative and great about them, except when I, introduce them to, like, friends of mine and stuff, and they're like, that person was just, like, nothing. That was, like, the absence of a person. And I'm like, you have no idea. Like, I don't... for some reason, like, I think I've dated a lot of introverts. Mm. Like, way more than extroverts, like 90-10.
That makes
or
sense.
Or 99-1, even. A lot of introverts. And so I encounter Michigan J Frogs a lot. So
I got that.
Yeah.
I've been that frog.
Yeah, so you bring them to, like, dinner. Yeah, you bring them to dinner with your family or with friends or whatever, and they are, like, a black hole. Mm-hmm. Like, they're the opposite of whatever they actually are. And it's confusing for everybody because they think that me, I just keep dating these, like, non-entities, like absences of
so your friends and family begin to become concerned.
And I'm like, they're like, why is he into that? Like, why is that his thing? Like, holes are good. Like, yeah, it's part of sex, but, like, a human hole? Like, just... he just needs the entire person to be a whole. He's that greedy.
This reminds me of so many things.
No, but let's talk. I mean, this is a good starting point because, like, okay, so your focus is Eros, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm no expert, but, like, when we talk about these things, like, I see a lot of, like, yeah, totally. Stuff with it. How would you explain what Eros even is?
Well, the reason that we always vibe about Eros really easily is because it's so, is basically the creative force. And you are an expert on that and you have a deep relationship with that. And so when we converse about this topic, I always feel like we're talking about the same force of nature flowing through things. And it's kind of an exacting energy to relate with. And so then we're often like, yeah, and then it's like, and you have to be with it like this, you know, or show up in this way with it or whatever, you know. And so it's like the creative force flowing through things. And so I teach this class on the Eros platform sometimes, called Introduction to the Erotic Artist. And I always say this thing where you can't, like, you know Eros through things, kind of like how you would know electricity through a light bulb or heat through a radiator. You can't be like, hand me Eros, you know, in the palm of my hand, but you can feel it and see it in things, and you can definitely feel its absence in things.
I love that. I always talk about the muse, and I talk about it in this very female and very sexual way, which a lot of people, when they live their life without that, they are the people who are having writer's block, weird anxieties about creating and stuff. And my life completely changed, and this was largely to do with Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art. When I read that, I was like, all right, I need to get myself in gear. I need to treat this more diligently. Being a creative person, instead of creating when the mood strikes, I need to have a daily practice relationship with the muse. What I did, and everybody who's heard me a million times knows this already, I decided to write at least one poem every single day without thinking about it before, during, or after, just being a conduit, and just allowing that small part of myself to open to that relationship. And then that's really what created me as a prolific artist. I was born out of that. I was born out of that relationship. And the way I explain it to people is, the muse doesn't want booty calls. The muse doesn't want, like, oh, you're in the mood, so you're going to call her up and be like, hey, babe, let's fucking create. She doesn't like that. She's not going to show up for that. she needs to at least hear from you every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there needs to be that connection. I think we're talking about similar things, and that's why we get along on this issue particularly, is that, like, it is erotic, and it is, you are dealing with another person. I never feel when I am creating, when I'm writing, when I'm whatever, that I'm alone. That's when I feel like the most like I'm with somebody else, is like, that process is very much me and her, you know? And for those listening at home, you don't have to believe in that as an actual spiritual or supernatural entity. You can think that that's just you digging into some deeper part of your brain. It works either way. However you want to approach it, if you want to approach it as like, here's a nice science hack for your brain, great. If you want to approach it as a spirituality, it's the same goddamn thing. But it fucking works. And it's changed the lives of so many people I've told it to and explained it to. And whether as just me being a friend or me coaching people, and it changed my life for the better, extremely. So I can understand how that Eros connection would have exponential benefit for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's the thing that bestows meaning and like color and life, basically, to life. It's the life in life. And I love that about like being in relationship with it every day. It doesn't want to be booty called. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. These examples, these metaphors come from a very real place. Like, mm-hmm. This is exactly what it's like. And the easiest shorthand is sex and relationships and romance. And I think when people shy away from that, I'm sure you've experienced this a million times, they're cutting themselves off to a plethora of language that is so appropriate for what we're talking about in life. It's like, if you shut down sexually, it's like saying, I'm not going to use any words with the letter E in it. You know, like, it's like a weird...
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, you just fucked yourself on so many different ways, and you think you're, you know, holier than thou, but like, sure. you're never going to be able to express yourself fully without that, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I call it like setting up the conditions of your life to be inviting to Eros flowing through. You can't demand it. You can't insist upon it coming through you or your life or your creative life or your relationships or your sex or your art or whatever, but you can set up the conditions that it likes, like that invite it to like want to flow through.
Yeah. It's, there's something too, like it's, I think one of the, and we've had this conversation, I don't know if specifically, but we've had versions of it, that, when I'm working on something, there's a titillation to it. There's like a tickle to the tongue. There's like sometimes erections. There's something like the creative act, especially when I'm alone. It's less so if I'm like in a room full of people shooting or something. That's like a different thing. But like if I'm like editing, like there's like a... There's a very almost sexual nature to it. And I think this is usually depicted in media, like a painter, like throwing paint, like on a canvas in like this very like swarthy, like dude way. Like,
they're always swarthy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the fucking, that's the thing people associate with it. But man, there is like a getting in the zone, editing a movie vibe wise to it, or like coloring a shot in a particular way, like just getting the color exactly right. Like you get fucking horned up, like doing it, man. And like, if I were to cut myself off from that, if I were to say like, I'm some weird pervert for this process, like I would be a lesser artist and I would be a lesser filmmaker. I would be less connected to myself and to what comes through me. I would be so fucking shut off, dude. And so particularly, you know, obviously critics, anywhere in life, whether haters that you might experience or I do, it's so funny that haters always want to cut you off from your own sexuality. Like that's what they want to cut off. Like your arm, they just want to fucking lob it off. They want to pick on certain aspects in your films or your art or whatever in my case, like they always want to be like, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be saying it like that. You shouldn't be whatever. Even before you make the thing sometimes. And it's like, it's because they know that that's really the source, you know? So I do think that there's a sourceness to Eros completely. Like, it's like the fundamental fucking, your sexuality is your first creativity to a certain extent.
It's, yeah, it's your connection to your power. That's how I think of it. Yeah, it's a, I mean, I practice, so like you talked about bringing in structure to your creative relationship with like a poem a day, like starting with that. And I practice orgasmic meditation. Like I aim to practice it every day. And it's the most elegant way that I've found as a woman to harness my erotic energy in a way that's like makes it mine and like kind of like centered in my own body and then usable for creativity, reaching higher states of consciousness, you know, whatever it is I want to use it for. But sexual energy, erotic energy is like rocket fuel to plug into any of those endeavors, you know? And it's like, if you don't have that, you can still, I mean, you can go to a cave and cut yourself off from everything and you can like meditate your way to enlightenment, I guess. But it's faster if you figure out how to harness erotic energy. Actually, I'm not really sure if you can make it to enlightenment without erotic energy. I would put money on not. I'm not an expert on that one, on enlightenment, because that's it's a little more masculine spirituality than like...
Yeah, and it's one of those words where like you could be having a conversation with someone, they're conceiving of enlightenment completely different from you.
Yeah.
Like they might be putting a ceiling on it that's so low, and that's why they think it's attainable without. And whereas your ceiling could be far higher and you don't realize that you're talking about two completely different things. It's like when I'm talking to somebody and I'm like, oh, I make films, they immediately like it's like computations go in their head and they think, oh, short films. And even if I'm like, no, I make like feature films, they're like, oh, okay, so like short films, like they're like feature must mean short, you know? They're like, mm-hmm. They just keep undercutting whatever it is I'm doing until I have to like properly explain it. So the words people use sometimes, they don't have the same definition whatsoever. I want to go back to orgasmic meditation. That's not something I've practiced at all. Like as, you know, like I'm not involved with anything that you guys do, but I get it. And I think it's really cool, and I think it's really fucked up that you guys have been so picked on, to say it lightly, and ostracized and punished, and the amount that you guys have endured simply for bringing a sexual energy to the meditative process is horrible. It's horrendous, and I will go on the record a million times saying that this is horrible. And if anybody wants to delve into this case, you know, I've talked about it on Twitter a bunch. I've talked about my Substacks, etc. This is an ongoing thing. This is a horrible thing. And they will paint you as whatever they can throw at you. Like it doesn't end, mm-hmm. You know, it's cults, it's witches, it's rape, it's all these fucking things. Mm-hmm. It's whatever they can throw at you.
Conspiracy to forced labor.
Yes.
Fuck, does that even mean?
I know. These like, these things.
These amorphous, like.
These terms that sound so formal and, like, objective, and then you stop for a second and you realize, like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, mm-hmm. That's not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, that can be a whole other tangent, but the point is, like, I don't know, man. I have known Maya forever. Maya is my canary in the coal mine barometer, etc. for this. She's the same goddamn person as I've always known. So I know she's not in the cult. I assume the same for you, but I've talked to you. So I know that your life has actually improved through all of this drastically. I'm not saying Maya's life hasn't improved. I'm just saying like the core of her is the exact same. I've known people that have gone to like shit that I would term an actual cult, mm-hmm. whether it be Scientology or Landmark and Est and all that fucking shit. And I've seen negative changes with what they went through. So I know I have examples of that. And I have examples of people that every person I meet with regards to what you guys do is just sweetheart and basically like an indoor cat, like the harmless, you know what I mean? Like they're just these very sweet, tend to be introverted. I don't know if that's accurate, but yeah. The ones that I've met.
Yeah.
Introverted, polite, warm people that...
We're more like monks than yes. not, you know, yes. like erotic monks.
But not... And I have an issue with monks. Like, honestly, like, there's like...
Well, they cut off yeah. sexuality.
Yeah, you know, yeah. exactly. Yeah. So, like, I wouldn't even classify that. Like, I think you guys are so much a better hang than monks. I hate the shit where you're walking down the street and they're like, here, take this thing. And then they're like, give me money. You know, that's monk shit, too.
Well, I guess what I meant was, like, the, you know, the discipline of it. Like, elevating it to a level of, like, discipline.
There is a thing with, like, cultural... touchstones and
yeah
it's stuff it's where true. Like we take the good and then we forget about all like the bad
yeah
and stuff like it's like monks are dicks when they do that like but like people just want to think about like the cool monk version anyway that's a whole other thing. I don't know where we got off we got off the rails with something but like the point is I have great respect for what you guys do. It doesn't really particularly interest me because I think I do have an outlet for it that I'm comfortable with and love. And it's...
You're in relationship with that force.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's what, like, you know, it's the spiritual thing of like, there's many different paths. We're all just coming back to the same thing. We're all kind of talking about the same thing. If it works, we're talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work, we're talking about different fucking things. Or you're lying about it working or mm-hmm. whatever it may be. Like, but anything that works, we're all in the same ballpark, but you guys have been unfairly picked on because of the sexual nature of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And practicing. And
yeah, you get, you know,
yeah,
you get a women run organization and mouthy women talking about a clit stroking practice and you're going to get some controversy.
Well, that's all allowed as long as you toe the du jour company line of like politics mm-hmm. and all that. Like that, they're cool with all that stuff as long as you're like, you know, DEI, woke, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's the marching orders.
Mm-hmm.
But the second you're like very much idiosyncratic and doing your own thing, then it's like with anybody.
Oh, you guys think for yourselves?
Yeah, it's like, but people experience that in friend groups. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
the second you're like, oh, I'm an independent politically, like there's, you know, if everybody's talking about one thing, suddenly you're like, all right, we can't talk about it around this person because this person's something else and I don't understand it.
You yeah. know,
like that's kind of how you guys were treated within all of that is like people started to realize like, oh, this is a genuinely unique thing. So this needs to be tamped down and this needs to be ostracized.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's the whole like... So much of liberation has to do with not just succumbing to like constructs, you know, like political constructs, like thought constructs, maybe relational constructs, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, how do you actually stay open to the value of a construct and going into different experiences or ways of thinking or ideologies or whatever, like you want to be free to be able to like go in, research, explore, but you also want to be free to exit and not be like murdered for it. You know, like the idea is to be able to, at least for me, with my aim towards liberation, like as my kind of ultimate aim in life, like I want to be able to go into these ideas and these places and these things and then come back out, talk about my experience, you know, sort of take the cream of the crop of what I experience and, you know, make a belief system out of it and keep it really flexible and be willing to be shown things that I haven't thought about before and change my mind, you know, like I don't know why that wouldn't be the aim.
Well, that's the whole thing is that that's discouraged in politics and in these culture wars that wage on is you're not allowed to see what the other side really thinks or get a genuine sense of what somebody believes that they would agree with, you know? so often in politics and everything, we're telling people what they think, that they would be like, I don't think that. And the only way you actually find out what people actually think is to actually spend time with them, have a charitable read on them and a normal conversation with them, instead of just name calling and all this stuff. You know, that's how life should be, is like, see if it works, see if the thoughts work, see if the people you gel with work. Like, strange bedfellows is the best thing possible. And you guys have experienced that to a certain extent, where, like, I don't think you guys would have planned for the amount of support that you've experienced from conservatives.
Yeah.
Because you associate, I'm not saying you particularly, but most people associate that with a closed offness to sex. But there was a common ground that they found, that they realized, like, wait a second, if you guys are being gone after spiritually, and this is setting precedent, this is precedent that's going to affect everybody. It doesn't matter what church you have. You know, you could have the most straight-laced church in the world, but, like, if somebody wants to term you a cult, mm-hmm. and turn you into pariah and shut you down, put you in jail, turn you into a political or spiritual prisoner or whatever, they can do that because mm-hmm. of this precedent. That's why, you know, I'm trying to raise awareness on this issue, and so many others on the right, not so much on the left. I just haven't seen that. Maybe there is that, but, yeah, strange bedfellows benefits everybody.
Like, yeah.
If we can find common ground on things, that's how we get solutions.
Yeah.
And that's how people get better, in my opinion.
Yeah, it has been really interesting. I remember the, I think it's called The American Conservative, did a piece, like a friendly piece on the case. And I sent it to my dad, you know. I don't often send media to my dad. My dad is like a pretty conservative Christian, but has been my whole life. And he's actually really supportive of my life. It's been a hard won experience, like, working on that together. But through this whole case and everything, and, you know, all of the, we'll call it persecution that we've experienced, he's actually been really great and really supportive. But I still don't send him a ton of media, just because, I don't know, it's just, like, weird to send your dad things that have sexual references vaguely related to your life, you know. It's just kind of intense. But I sent him that one, and he was like, this is an excellent article, you know. I've been touched, actually, by all the different kinds of people who have come out in various ways, who care a lot about, have opened their heart in a certain way to, you know, this, like, battle and this fight, you know, to get my friends out of jail, basically, like, pre-trial and everything, to try to get the whole thing thrown out. And then now, you know, working towards appeal and all of that. And it's just been, like, it's actually really touching. All the people who come out in ways that you wouldn't expect. And it has been more on the right, with some on the left and some right down the center. And that's been really cool too, to get to know, like, a lot of different angles of where people are coming from with it. And like you said, like, anybody who can relate to, I don't know. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I feel like almost anything spiritual or based on a belief or a practice and communal is, like, potentially in danger.
Or anything voluntary.
Yeah.
You know, anything where you're just doing something for no pay.
Yeah.
You know, people work on my movies for no pay. Like, what happens if somebody turns around and is like, I was, you know, oppressed because I had a line in a Cody Clark movie?
Yeah.
Like, it sounds ridiculous, but it really
isn't. That's where we're at.
Yeah, it's as ridiculous as what you guys are going through.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't, you know, in the end, like, the only charge they felt like they could convict on was forced labor. Conspiracy to forced labor, which is just...
Which is made
still
up bullshit.
So weird, yeah. To me. Like, and then, because, yeah, I just think, you know, I remember when that came through initially, I was like, oh, okay. Like, I knew, based on, you know, the original article and everything that started this whole thing, that they were looking into the idea of sex trafficking, which isn't which isn't just so far from anything ever happened. And I remember this weird charge coming through instead, eventually, and being like, what the heck is that? I guess that's good, because they're, you know, they couldn't find anything on sex trafficking because it didn't happen. But now I'm like, maybe sex trafficking would have been easier to disprove,
because we're
conspiracy to force labor is so fucking stupid. Like, what the hell does that mean? You can, it's one of those like weird shaped tools or puzzle pieces or something that you could just twist any which way and plug into any narrative that you want to get across. And so what they did in the trial was use that wording and then just hit the jury with all kinds of salacious stuff that didn't matter.
Yeah, that didn't prove that.
No.
That just created this halo effect of these are crazy witch people.
Because people don't really have much of a relationship with erotic energy.
Right.
So then you have a jury of like normal people, like your average person, like I'm sure they're lovely people, like whatever, but like not, most people aren't like anything fascinatingly sexual about anything, and people are like, whoa, kind of knocked out.
Yeah, well, this was this happened with pornography. I don't know how familiar you are with this, but like there were a lot of trials and weird fucked up things with pornography, and some of the best defenses of pornography, because they were facing obscenity charges, where they were saying that like merely making the movie was like, we got to put you in jail kind of shit. Like that was crazy. Doesn't matter how much consent went on. It doesn't matter if people got paid. Doesn't matter whatever. It was just like, no, this is obscene. So this can't exist. So you guys have to go to jail. Like not even fines. Like you guys have to go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get into the whole, there was a guy who was doing pornography that was particularly extreme who went to jail. I don't want to bring up that whole thing because that's a tangent thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about more is the obscenity stuff. Ayn Rand, who's a writer that I really enjoy, she wrote some of the best defenses of pornography as art and as creative expression. And she hated pornography. She personally abhorred it. And she was one of the best defenders of it. Like, you read some of her essays defending pornography against these obscenity charges, which are preposterous, and you can't even argue in any good faith way. She recognized, like, the free speech aspect of it, and she was fucking badass. Like, you read her stuff, it's way more badass than anybody who was dabbling in it, like for realsies. Hmm. Like, and she didn't watch any of it. She didn't like it. Hmm. You know, maybe she would even fucking like it, but but she didn't allow herself to. But even she, because she was so fucking First Amendment, really.
Right. She could see where it goes to.
She could see,
like,
that.
If you don't.
And that's the thing. I wish people, like, even if you're not interested, even if you never want to do it, even if you never want to open yourself up sexually whatsoever, you know, that's your prerogative. But you got to see where this is going. You can be the most straight-laced motherfucker in the world, but like, they're going to come after you too. It's just that they're using this salacious thing as the way to establish the precedent, because it's like, look over here, look at these crazy witches.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're going for. It's a witch hunt. That's the purpose of a witch hunt. I think people too often bring it back to the Michigan J. Frog. What's the other cultural touchstone that always comes up is witch trials. People talk about the witch trials. Now, the sad thing about people bringing it back to that a million different times is that they talk about it as though that was the end game and that was it. That was just it. No, how that often happens in actual reality, it's kind of a flimsy metaphor, because really what it is about is, let's establish this precedent with these witches so that we can then go after everybody else. You know, who's the witch tomorrow and who's the witch the next day? That's really what it's about. I think far too often we think about it as, oh, this stain, this cultural mistake, this abuse of justice that was about, they wanted to go after witches. I think most people don't even want to go after witches. They just want to go after they just want to call somebody a witch. It's kind of like with the Nazi thing with like the right.
Mm-hmm.
They call it, there's this thing that Jack Posobiec keeps saying on like Twitter, who he says like, the reason they call you a Nazi is so that they can shoot you. You know, they don't shoot you because you're a Nazi.
To justify it.
They call you a Nazi so that they can shoot you. It's right. The same thing with witches. It's the same, like, they don't genuinely think you guys are witches. They just know that that works. Like, this is the inversion. And that's where the metaphor kind of falls apart, is because, like, we get locked into this idea that, like, oh, they really hated witches. They really wanted to go after witches. It's like, no. I don't think any of those fucking people really thought they were witches.
Yeah.
I think they just saw the power of calling somebody a witch.
Yeah.
That's really the lesson, but that's just commonly not how it's thought of.
It's just funny because it's like, it's funny you brought this up, because just in the last few years, and then even just in the last week, I wrote this piece that has some witch hunt history in it and stuff, but just in the last few years I've researched this more and looked deeper into witch hunts a lot, as you can imagine, in the last like 3-4 years, and have like made different videos about this on social media and stuff.
By the way, you should please watch your podcast, the ones that go up on YouTube, and you do amazing stuff. Like I really enjoy, I started watching them just because you're like cool and like I know you. And then I was like, oh, now I'm like an actual fan of these. Like, I'm looking forward to them every week.
Eros Revolution.
Eros Revolution on YouTube. Yeah.
So I started looking deeper into it, and I found out all kinds of crazy shit about witch hunts. First of all, yeah, the witches, I mean, they were women. They weren't witches. They were women. A lot of them were midwives. You know, a lot of them had knowledge of like the female body, herbs, you know, things like that. Super dangerous things like that. Freaked everybody out.
Yeah.
Magic.
Anything that nature. Works that you can't explain mm-hmm. in a way that...
Especially back then, because there wasn't even like freaking barely science yet, you know? So there was mostly they couldn't explain things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and it's interesting too, because I think women have a magnet, let's call it. We have a magnet. We have a certain kind of power that operates. I mean, you can have it operate above the radar as a woman, or you can operate it under the radar, but you're impacting your environment quite a bit as a woman. I mean, you can see this like in the classic, there's been a million movie scenes like this, you know, where there's like a woman, she looks fucking hot, she goes to a bar, she goes and sits at the bar alone, the whole, you know, room of men is like, and it's not because of the dress. It's not because of anything. She like turns on she flips a switch. I want attention, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, there's something undeniable about like women having this thing. And so that would upset people. That has historically upset people as well. Like, you know that women can move things under the radar.
It breaks the paradigm.
Yeah.
Whatever paradigm you're trying to set up, it's like, yeah, but there's this thing. And then that kind of like, everyone's like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean?
And instead of being like, oh, yeah, like, I am moved by women under the radar, whatever gender you are, you're moved by women. But like, instead of there being just kind of an understanding of that.
Even gay guys are into it.
Dangerous.
You know? Gay guys
totally.
Love
gay
that.
Gay guys love women.
I know. They love that. But they love particularly that aspect. And straight guys love it. And gay guys love it. And women love it. And everybody loves it.
Everybody loves it.
There's a source.
And when
that.
Women are like generous with it and sharing it and expressing it, people love being around it too. You know, that's a magnetic woman. That's a radiant woman. That's a
it's
woman.
It's also
who's
something
like,
you can't remove, because it's like you naked, you without clothes, still have that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's drawn onto you.
Or in like a potato sack, no makeup.
Sure. Well, that's when girls get hit on the most, right?
Exactly, right?
Every girl has that experience.
Yeah.
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 It's always the day where you're walking around.
Your legs aren't shaved, you know?
Yeah.
It's always the potato sack day. but it's like that force in women gets demonized as well. And so, okay, so it was midwives a lot. I read this really cool book last year that talked about actually like, oh, it was so good. It's called The Immortality Key. I forget the author, Brian something. But that was about like ancient psychedelic rituals in like the Eleusinian mysteries and stuff like that. And it talks about how women, there were lineages of women who held the recipes for these particular psychedelic compounds and were kind of the initiators within these like rituals and stuff. And there were, I forget which philosophers, but it was like Plato and like somebody else super famous like that, where like they called these rituals the fabric that held society together. And they were, I think, kind of the birth, like they had to do a lot with the birth of Western civilization.
Absolutely.
And so during these witch hunts, right, this was another, these specific lineages of women were hunted down and killed that held these recipes, because they replaced these rituals and these psychedelic recipes with you know, the Eucharist. Like they replaced it with masculine spiritual traditions and religions that have symbolic Eucharists instead of real ass psychedelic Eucharists that really put you in contact with the divine. Now you eat a cracker.
Fucking plain ass cracker.
Right, now you eat a cracker and grape juice.
Yeah. Well,
but it used to be like a whole different thing.
When you talk about the recipes, I'm reminded of this thing. Do you know that like, so like the first Chinese people that came over were like the dudes, right? Because they were like working on stuff and they were, you know, that was that whole thing. But they wanted like Chinese food to eat. So they would like make Chinese food because that's what they wanted to make and have. And it was fucking whack as fuck. It was like the worst. Chinese food was so bad before they started bringing their women over to America. Because they were just like, oh, how do you make that thing again? I don't know. It kind of looks like this. And Chinese food used to be fucking terrible, the first wave of it. And then once the women came over, Chinese food was the shit. And everybody wanted to eat it.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who you are. Everybody wanted fucking Chinese food.
Yeah.
Because the women knew the fucking recipes. So it's like they know like the spiritual, like cosmic recipes.
Yeah.
They also know how to make some fucking stir fry.
Yeah.
You know, they, yes. It's all the same shit.
Yeah.
And that's why it all comes back to creativity, right? Because fucking I know the recipe to make a good fucking movie, you know? And like I can go into any room and make a movie better. Whatever anybody's working on. It's not because I'm fucking brilliant. It's not because I'm smarter. It's because I'm more connected and I can tell when something is faking it and I can tell when it's really, we have something here. Mm-hmm. I can tell when it's magic tricks and I can tell when it's fucking magic. So anything anybody's working on, I can hear the lines and be like, oh, you're pretending like that's okay. That's you're doing an impression of a profound line. You're not, that's not an actual profound, like I can, right. I can see the matrix code. It's not even the matrix code. It's like putting on like, you know, glasses to see invisible ink or something. It's like, I can,
yeah,
that's how I fucking make shit better.
Yeah.
And I can teach people to get to that place within themselves to open that door psychically. Cause I do believe that creativity is a psychic act. It's a psychic connection that you have. I'm cheating off myself having finished it when I'm working on something, like I'm getting glimpses at the finished product and then I make the thing. That's it's a,
because time actually flows backward.
Well, yeah, but it's also like it's a time loop. All time is a loop, and so like it's a paradox. It's a, you know, it's anyway, so that's how I make things better. And that's all we're really talking about here, is that like there, sure, there's written down recipes and that's great. And it's, but also like the recipe is just like your fucking soul. Like, have you ever seen the movie Book of Eli?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you'd fucking love Book of Eli.
Okay. Is it animated?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know what I'm thinking of.
Book of Eli is the shit. Okay. So I don't even want to reveal why it's the shit or why you will like it. You know, everybody at home who's seen Book of Eli is thinking to themselves, oh my God, she would love Book of Eli. And anybody who hasn't is like, what's Book of Eli? I want to see it. Just, I want to be the Aubrey in the situation and go off and watch it. So anybody at home who knows where I'm going with this, but not going with it because I don't want to spoil it, is like, yes, she's going to love it. Okay. Yeah. You got to watch Book of Eli.
Okay.
Great movie.
All right.
I'll stop it there.
I'll add that to the I have to finish watching your movies. And I have to, I'll add
yeah,
that.
She hasn't even seen all my movies.
Yeah.
So
just like six or something.
Yeah, like five or six.
Yeah.
But you like, what's your favorite movie of mine?
You know, it's like kind of a toss up between Mute Date and Ramekin.
Okay. Right on.
I think it depends on what kind of mood I'm in, you know?
Mm-hmm. I knew you would like Mute Date just because of the nature of our conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Ramekin could go either way because it's a little silly and it's childlike.
There's something about it. It's so compelling.
Well, it is deep.
It's so compelling.
It's like, a fucking deep movie, dude.
Yeah.
There's stuff about abusive relationships in there. There's stuff about narcissism. There's stuff about all these concepts that are, I like to play with things in ways that I haven't seen them played with. And so it's brain food, even though it's silly.
Well, and I told you it reminded me of, you know, people's relationship with ChatGPT.
Yes.
A little bit, which tripped me out.
You pointed that out for me, which obviously I couldn't have predicted.
Yeah.
But I was sensing something coming. I was sensing something on the horizon. I didn't know it was ChatGPT. I didn't know it was the AI even.
Yeah.
But yes, that movie, you watched that in 2025, that's a totally different movie from when you watch Ramekin when it first came out, because the landscape is, everybody's got an Emily Ramekin relationship in their pocket now.
Totally.
You talk to ChatGPT, it'll get you on that Ramekin kick quick, fast.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you pointing that out,
because
that
people's,
I was so far away from that when I worked on it, and I remained that way. Like, I remained that way. And then you pointed out, I was like, oh, fuck, you're so right. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, I like your movies a lot. They're very, like, the way they look feels like you can, the words don't quite capture what I'm trying to say, but like, you can rest your eyes on it in a way that isn't stressful, like watching things now. 100%. Especially, it's stressful on like all parts of you. It's stressful on your eyes, on your mind, on your soul. You know, it's fast. There's always like a lot kind of happening on a screen to keep people's attention. It's like,
I'm glad you say that.
Yeah, but it's not a lack of something. It's just that they're just beautiful in this way that you can like relax into.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then there's like, you know, this dialogue or this like inner monologue or, you know, this unfolding experience that's actually really intense sometimes. Like,
sure, yeah.
Really intense sometimes. Like, I'll be like, and then there's a, and then I like the dissonance between the two. Like, I like the feeling of one part of my mind resting completely in it while some other part of me is actually having like a pretty intense emotional experience.
I feel the same way. And that's why I construct them in that way, is because I want the flash to be happening in that area. I don't want the flash to be happening in this like brainwashy, like bombardment way, because I believe in the strength of the words. And I think that the words are the trip that I want people to go on. And I just want people to, I don't want to break people's trust. You know, there's been moments in some of my movies where there are quicker scenes and I choose them wisely.
It's some wild stuff in Ramekin.
Yeah, I choose those wisely because I do. Look, there's two schools of thought with film, ultimately, which is, do we want to sit down with something or do we want to basically destroy somebody's brain to the point that they think that they liked it? And most entertainment that people both don't like and think they like is, it's just sensory overload.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it is. Sure, there's good movies like that. Sure, that's a way to go with it. But like, it's a fucking trick. When people see quick cuts in succession and they're basically put through that as what they have to look at, you know, because I like movies where you can look at any different thing you want in the frame and like, zone out on like, oh, that's cool, that thing over there or whatever, you know, that's, I like that kind of thing. But when people are put through that, like images in succession really, really fast, all that stuff, it's just like, first of all, there's no trust in the audience. There's no trust that like what you have to say is compelling. And it, you're immediately a charlatan, in my opinion, because that's not the purpose of film. Just because you can use film in a particular way doesn't mean it's the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just much like McDonald's and like isn't the purpose of food. You know, like it's, we're not supposed to hit people with the sweet and salty and fat and like those things aren't really the purpose of food. Yes, you can use it in those ways. But I'm pretty fucking minimalist Buddhist when it comes to how I was raised as far as food and culturally and all that stuff. And like, I can fucking zone out on like a perfectly good bowl of rice. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, like a little bit of rice with like a little bit of like a good soy sauce drizzled on it. That's a fucking cause. I'll be halfway across the fucking galaxy tripping out on that. And that's how I create. This is
the same conversation we're having in Eros.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same thing. It's like the idea is to resensitize,
yes.
Like give people the opportunity to like resensitize to how potent things are naturally, just naturally. They just are. Like if you have the ability to actually tune in to what you're feeling, what you're tasting, to tune into your senses and really be present with what's happening. You don't want a shit ton of stimulation over the top on any one of your senses because it's too much. It's like you want the sweet spot amount, you know, for that moment kind of thing. Like you want to be able to sink in and like really taste. Really
it's like
feel.
Even people that go to like loud nightclubs and stuff, they're looking for the moment within that experience where all that gets drowned out and they lock into somebody's eyes or something. They're looking for to transcend that distraction. And yet we are bombarding people with distraction, you know? So it's like, I think ultimately people are, it's almost like in film, there's a tendency to, whether you're depicting a dream or you're depicting a sex scene or an action scene, to have a lot of cuts because we think of, we remember that like when you're experiencing these things, you're experiencing like these snapshots in a row, like if you were to think about it properly. But when you're, the true actual experience of it is not that. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, yes, that's a part of it, but that's not, it couldn't be properly depicted in that way. And that's why I think with my movies, a lot of times it's like an unbroken shot, but then like a narration that will take you through something. It's because what it really is, does feel like that intimate moment, whether it be a sexual thing or whatever, is I'm grounded, but I'm also being, there's like a water, like I'm riding something, or like there's a current that I'm like on, even though I'm locked down into something. Like it's, yeah, it's like, it's basically, it's the inverse of how we depict it in media, I would say.
Yeah.
Because like when people cut a lot, it's oftentimes no guiding it intentionally. Like the one example that I would say is a good example of that is there's a film called Rules of Attraction. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
The scene where he goes to Europe and he has that like fast cut, like, and then I went here and then I went here and then like, that's amazing sequence. Some of the best sequences I've ever seen in a movie because it's equally both things that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's the words matter and the visuals matter. And fuck, when you can do that, great. You know, that's really what it all comes down to. But most often I would just rather the words matter and the visuals be a chair you can sit in. I didn't realize we were going to talk about this as much as we did, but I'm having realizations that as part of the reason I love talking to you is because you're causing me to remember things that I forgot that I knew to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And I think we do that for each other in a really good way.
How you think about things and how you create and basically your relationship with the creative force, like, and then how you talk about it. Helps like it brings up all kinds of different creative things in my mind and inspires me to put words to, you know, thoughts and bits of things that would otherwise never have form. And it's always like really interesting to see what comes out. And it always, I mean, yeah, that the, it just always, I'm always struck by how the common ground feels like. I call it Eros. You call it creativity. I also call it creativity.
I don't even necessarily call it creativity. I don't know if I have a word for it like you do. The word I use a lot is a muse, but even that is like, I don't think that's the end all of it all.
Yeah.
Eros is great. That's fine. I think anytime somebody finds a word that feels like home to them, fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, and use it for as long as it does and then switch it if you need to. But like, whether people call something God or the universe or whatever, like as long as you're really connecting to something, like that's really what matters.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it doesn't even always like to be called a thing.
Yes.
You know, it does.
It could rebel against that.
Totally.
At a moment's notice.
Totally. And it's like, you know, well, as what I said earlier, it's an exacting, a phrase in my community, it's an exacting mistress.
Interesting.
And so she's always kind of, she, you know, like she likes that in this moment, I guess. So I'm calling it a she right now. Like, I don't even usually do that. You know what I mean? But it's like, it feels right in the moment. It's like what feels, it really, I mean, it's like a real relationship. It's like you're, I experience it like stroking something, caressing something, you know, it's like a physical sensation of being caressed by something and caressing something, almost stroking. And like, and there's a, you know, when you're, you know, in resonance with it, and then you know when you get a little farther from that, and then you're kind of feeling for the spot and being like, oh, okay, how do you want to be described just so that I can be in the most resonance with you possible?
Well, that's, I know what you're talking about sexually, but that's literally how I feel when I'm on stage doing stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, I am stroking the audience, and I am also being stroked by the audience, mm-hmm. and it's we're talking about riding a wave, basically. Like that's fucking what it is, man. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think performance can be literally that in certain forms of performance. And stand up is, if you're really doing it, like if you're not just like, because I, you know, I see people go up on stage and they're just not connecting with the actual art form in any real way. They're just going through the motions. But If you're really experiencing the act of doing stand up, it is exactly what you're talking about. You know?
Yes. Yeah. It makes me think, I mean, I feel like then people are just kind of like, everybody's always kind of trying to get on the spot, you know, into that place of most resonance. They just wouldn't necessarily call it that or think of it that way or consciously necessarily engage with it like that. But then some people are consciously engaging it with it like that. But it's like, this is why orgasmic meditation works for me, because that's literally what you're doing. You're just doing it with the clitoris.
Right. Yeah.
Finger and clitoris. You're just looking for literally the point of most resonance at any given time. What's the correct meaning, what would bring you into most resonance in that moment, correct pressure, correct speed, correct location, correct direction, up or down, you know, and there's like a lot of combinations of it. So it's kind of like playing music, but you're just, it changes, but it's a clit, it's dynamic. Like, what is the most sensational resonant place changes.
Yeah, that's why it's a good, much like a pendulum in psychic whatever, like, mm-hmm. There's certain objects, there's certain, I don't even think object is the right word, but like icons or access points, nodes, whatever. The reason why we build a musical instrument in a particular way is to create those opportunities.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's yeah, that's what we're talking about, is it's about using what you have on your own body for as an instrument to mm-hmm. a certain extent, and letting it be played and also playing it yourself or whatever it may be. Like, it's a, I don't know, every time I get on stage is different, and every movie I make is different, even within the same movie. every day, every second of it, every sentence is different. But it's all part of the same thing. And I'm riding waves. I never thought about this, but the word writing, like writing and riding, they're so similar. And I think they're very closely related. Mm. I think writing and riding, it's the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
When I'm writing, I'm riding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm chasing and I am being chased, and I'm finding something there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because it's coming through you that it's like that. And it's kind of like your antenna. You're trying to point it a little bit closer to. That's why it's so sad that we got away from analog when it comes to television. Because we had this beautiful device that would teach us this lesson all the time, which is, you know, we got to point the antenna like in the right.
It's funny, I just talked about that on my podcast.
Really?
Today. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Adjusting the antenna and the dial. But, I was talking about a radio, but.
But don't you think like that was probably a positive thing for people is to experience that divorced of what they thought they were actually
doing.
Yeah,
what the heck are people doing now to know that? I don't know if they're, is there anything you're dialing in to...
But we had this beautiful...
Get it?
We had this beautiful thing of like pointing the antenna in a particular way and watching on screen as it gets clearer, it gets less clear. We don't have that with digital. And that much as people long for film grain, I long for just analog television signal shit. Like there's something beautiful there,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah, antennas, man. It's what we are, and it's also what we're doing.
Yeah.
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 So
like that's
why I think if I could boil it down as a complete outsider to what you guys do, is that you it's a way to both be an antenna and also almost like in a microcosm way, like access a point of your body that it is an antenna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like
the most,
it's like a
we
fractal,
call it the most
right?
sensitive part of the human body combined with the most dexterous part of the human body.
Ah, so dexterous being the finger. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Totally.
Resonance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, why are we fucking making flutes that look like cocks? Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like, it's why is anything anything? It's because we're...
Well, it's both. I mean, it has holes.
Right. But what I'm saying is we're constantly reinventing sexuality.
Yeah.
In creative ways.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of a creative object, a tool for creativity that isn't in some way phallic or...
Vaginal.
Like it's kind of all we can conceive of.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like
those are the building blocks of creativity.
Yeah. My keys on my keyboard are all just a bunch of fucking clits. And I'm just fucking. And my, if I'm using a pen, that's a fucking dick. And the ink is the cum and whatever it may be. Everything is fucking sexual. And that's why this shit fucking works.
Dude. Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. It is. It is. And then it's like, yeah, actually, all the way back at the very beginning, you said something about, I don't know. We were talking about people cutting off from it and acting pure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, real purity is when you, to me at least, it's when you let that force wash through you so much, like so fully, that it washes out just like everything that's not you.
Yeah.
And that's purity. Like that's a purification process.
Yeah.
Creative energy or erotic energy or the energy of the universe or, you know, spiritual energy, whatever it is, like letting that wash through and express through you so much that you, like the water of you runs clear or something like that, you know, and actually cutting off from it is so impure. Like cutting off from it is like so what's that word, hubris. It's like the ultimate act of self and like block
there's an entitlement like,
yeah
to it.
Yeah, 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 it's arrogant
it hubris. Is arrogant. Yeah,
yeah,
It's also, I mean, I always hate when people talk about, like, you know, colloquially people talk about, like, you know, erections for no reason or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm just hard for no reason. And it's like, no, you're hard for reasons that have nothing to do with the accepted traditional reasons to be hard. You know what I mean? Like, if you're riding the bus and you get hard, it's not necessarily because the bus is, like, shaking on the chair in a particular way. Sometimes it's because you just feel fucking engaged and you're going somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I'm on.
Yeah.
And your body's like, we're doing this.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no, we're not. You know what I mean? Like, it's, so I don't believe in the
God, it must be really vulnerable to be a guy and have your arousal be so, you know, public, potentially public.
Potentially, depending on what you're wearing. Like,
but like, that's just different for women.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
You know?
Yeah,
it radiates off of us and you'll draw attention whether you want to or not. Like, if you're mm-hmm. just aroused, you're like, uh-oh, like, I'm out in public, I'm aroused. People are going to be looking at me and not necessarily even know why, but they have no proof. They have no physical proof.
There's no poker face. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of poker faces out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're trained to do.
Yeah. Girls. Yeah. It's different. It's guys have a poker face too for that, for sure.
Well, there's this thing in my community that we say, which mm-hmm. is men. It's like everybody has a teleprompter that you can just read to know what is going on with them, mm-hmm. like what they're not saying. But men have it on their forehead and women have it on their pussy.
That's great.
So, you know, the genitals never lie.
That would work as a stand-up premise.
Right?
100%. Don't you find that with a lot of wisdom and shit?
Yes.
It's really like
it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't funny, it probably isn't.
Totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's suspect a little bit if it's too serious. You're
so,
like,
yeah, my personal belief, I don't believe in no reason boners. I don't fucking believe in it. I think it's just there's a wave going through you that is related to something that just isn't this cartoonish thought of, like, a lady walked by and that's, you know, like, it's just that, like, your body is just like, hey, we're feeling this.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be. And I don't think erections are purely like purposeful. Like, I think sometimes your body will give you erections metaphorically, like just to communicate something, a need or an achievement in a certain sense, or like, this is good, this is right. And it's just never thought of that in that way.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I part of the reason I brought up the thing of, like, me getting hard while I'm, like, editing or whatever is because there's a quote from a writer who I'm blanking on the name of, where he was talking about how, like, he would be, like, writing and he would just have to, like, get up and, like, go masturbate because it was so intensely, like, he was so, like, that was just part of it. And he was considered a great writer, and I'm blanking on his name for whatever reason. But, like, he knew the writing was good when, like, he had to, like, all right, I need to go, like, wag off right now.
And he
wasn't a fucking erotic writer. Like, he was just a normal-ass fucking writer. But he was so in it.
Yeah.
He was writing that fucking whatever, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily my experience with it, but I do, it's close enough that, like, I fucking get it, you know? And I think there's something there that we don't talk about as people.
Yeah. Well, I feel like you're kind of pointing to the way people treat arousal in general.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this is the same thing with women's power. Women's power is just women's arousal, really.
Which is different from women's empowerment.
Yes.
Because that's
branding
thing.
And that is a branding thing. And there are different, very different kinds of feminism. Yeah.
Women's
know?
Power is,
oh my gosh,
constant.
There's the Andrea Dworkin type of feminism that's like all heterosexual sex is rape, which is terrifying, which is actually pretty sneakily present right now.
I would say
in things.
It's demonic.
It's becoming less and less sneaky.
It's demonic.
Yeah.
It seeks to destroy.
Yeah.
I am suspicious of everything that fucking seeks to destroy.
Yeah.
The second I see it seeking to destroy, I'm like, I don't care what you say this is as far as how positive it is or whatever. Something's fucked up, the second something is
demonizing sex.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yes.
What's this nonsense? Like, what is this? You know,
that's my big issue with some conservatives too, is like the second I see them start like venturing into like the nofap kind of like or even like no sex before marriage, no, like all these like confines, I'm like, all right, why aren't you feeling shame over expressing that, and you want people to feel shame over not feeling that way? Like, why, what's that thing? Why isn't this like an inside thought that you are having within yourself of what you don't want to do? And why is it something you feel so comfortable proclaiming for others? You know what I mean? Like, that's weird. And I, for some reason, that doesn't read as weird. That reads as like righteous and virtuous and stuff. And it's like, no, that's fucking weird, dude. Yeah. Like, that's an odd thing to bring to the table.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that healthy sexuality is the most normal thing to bring to the table, but it's totally inverted. And that's partially what you guys are up against, is the, and it's not just from staunch conservatives, and it's not just from people on the left. It's like this, it's a nefarious thing that crops up within people, no matter what their political affiliation, whatever they're going on with. It's an inherent distrust of their own sexual side of themselves, really.
Yeah,
like that whole thing that they just don't want.
It's not being in relationship with the sex impulse and like the cost of that, basically.
It's like when women are like, I'm gonna withhold sex because blah blah blah, and it's just like,
well, you're like, oh, okay, we'll just reduce it to being used only for transaction.
That's what
great.
It is,
that's
right?
That's so great. Yeah. What a brilliant plan.
Yeah,
it's intense how people treat it, and arousal in general, like the rising of arousal. It's like the rising of arousal is the arising of life inside of something, inside of a body, inside of a connection, inside of like a project, you know, or like something you care about, inside of a space that you like set up in a particular way, whatever it is. And it's like, it's life. It's literally the rising of life. And I feel like there's just so much right now aimed at crushing it.
Yeah.
And keeping it down and just shut, like, not too much arousal. Keep that down. Not too much of that. Oh, okay. It's very connected to sexuality. Kill that. You know, SSRIs, like, it's just, rampant. There's this, it's really a war on sex.
Absolutely.
It's really a war on sex.
Well, it's also like, I mean, the thing that I try and do to get along with people is I try and look past what they're saying towards how they intend it.
Yeah.
You know, so like, there could be some hyper-conservative listening to us talking right now, listening to this podcast, and being like, well, that guy and that girl, they seem to get along just fine. They should get married and start having some kids right now, like, together. Like, that could be their thing about it. That could be their, that's how it expresses for them. Somebody else who's a little bit freer or whatever might be thinking, listening to this podcast, being like, them two should go fuck right now. They keep talking about sex. The second this thing goes off the air, they're going to fucking jump at it like bunnies. That's the other side of it. But they're both talking about the exact same thing. They're just talking about it in their own versions of language. So instead of me being like dismissing one or whatever, I'm just like, oh yeah, cool. And I think I'm used to that because of making art and dealing with people's comments or reviews or whatever. I'm always having to read between people's lines of like, what they are saying about it and deducing what they're actually coming, where they're actually coming from, whether they're writing a bad review or a good review. It's like, both can be equally annoying. Trust me. Like there's
I understand.
People that like you that can be like, oh my God.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand.
There's people that don't like you that can be, oh my God. But yeah, it's just, I think the way I approach it is, all right, what's the intent, whether they even know it or not? Because they might not even know their own intent, but I can probably pick up on like what they mean by something, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a big aspect of erotic philosophy is like connection over anything. you know, so actually like doing the work to be connected to other people, to make connection more of a priority than sussing out if you have the exact same belief system or not, and then eliminating them as a human being in your mind
and what
because
is
they
dating,
don't.
Yeah, the whole world of dating tells people to do that exact horrible thing, which is pair up as idiosyncratically as possible as far as like what you want right now, and not affording partners or potential partners the ability to grow with you and grow closer, you know, and meet you at a point. It's all about who's at that point right now. And it's like, fuck, dude, like that's a total inversion. Like if you want to talk about like crazy inversion, now we're getting off the idea of people as on a journey, and we're getting on to the idea of people as fixed states, which is robotic, which is the opposite of what we are, you know. There's been people in my life that like it's just not the right time ever. We're perfectly great people, you know. We're never on this. We're never even friends. I think people often experience where like everybody has like some friend that they get along with really well, can never get together with them. It would be like moving heaven and earth to sit down and like hang out with that fucking person. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. It's like the friend that's like your best friend that you see like maybe once a year if you're lucky. Like everybody has that. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. And we just know that like these things are fucking journeys, dude. It's not you're this, pair up. You're this, pair up. Like there's a lot of things wrong with online dating and dating in general and what people are told to look for. That is like, oh my God. Like this, I saw that in the last couple of years, the whole like right wing thing of like find somebody to, you know, go off the grid with, and like, no, that's the first act of a horror movie. You know, that's not happily ever after. That's best laid plans go awry. You know, that's that. Okay. What does actually work in life is two people growing closer together, further apart. Both are equally good. You know what I mean? Like that's really what it is. Whenever you start a story with two people, exact same position, exact same beliefs, exact same everything, the whole point of the story is to teach them that is horrifying and boring and horrible.
Well, they can only grow apart from there.
They can only grow apart, and it's going to be in a very hard way, and because they're going to have to learn the lesson of time on top of everything else. Like nobody wants to watch the movie of two people going in, you know, cottage life bullshit, and they just live through that, you know. They have to get there, and then shit starts going awry.
You want an enemies to lovers story, I hear you.
I'm kidding. Yeah. It's I don't know. I'm going off on all sorts of tangents. We should start wrapping this up. Do you have any thoughts on what I just said, or do you want to move forward?
The thing that I thought the most actually was of these really funny videos that I've been seeing on social media that are like something like something, this is not quite it, but it's like something like, you're not going to date liberal in this economy. The videos that people make about it are so funny. Like there was this one that was like, the check is coming, you know, they were on a date and the check is coming, and the guy, she's looking at him like, you're going to pay for this, right? And he's like, he looks at the waiter and he's like, how dare you put that in front of me? Can't you see that we're, you know, we do equal rights here? Yeah. And she's like, I'm dating a Republican, and like leaves, you know. It's like that is just something were talking about.
I've heard
made
the
me
phrase,
think of that.
Feminist until the check comes.
Yeah. You know, yeah. But. Feminist till there's a spider.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. That is so partly what you were saying made me laugh. But yeah, definitely. I think we could spend a whole episode on dating.
Yeah. Yeah.
And apps.
All right. Well, let's wrap up this episode. I do something here. If anybody has listened to the show, they know what I'm talking about. I do stupid questions. That's how we end this. So can I ask you some stupid questions?
Sure.
They're quick. They're stupid.
All right.
Okay. So can you, first of all, can you state your full name real quick for me?
Aubrey Ann Fuller.
Okay. Do you ever think like it kind of sounds like Aubrey and Fuller, like two people? Like there's Aubrey and there's Fuller.
I actually haven't thought of that.
It's Aubrey and Fuller.
No, I haven't thought about that. Just that my initials are like awesome as fuck.
Aubrey and.
But no, I haven't thought of that actually.
Yeah. So yeah, you can start thinking about that.
Okay. Okay. Excellent.
Okay. Another super question. A lot of these are name based. People have been writing to me saying it should just be name questions. And no, because they're stupid. Fundamentally, they're stupid. Sometimes they're name questions. Okay. So have you seen Home Alone?
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like a kinship to the character of Fuller in Home Alone? Do you remember the character of Fuller?
I think I felt embarrassed.
Okay. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did people ever give you shit for being named Fuller?
Mm-mm.
Okay. But he's gone on to great things, Kieran Culkin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I think every kid would probably be thinking like, I'm taking on this role of like the kid who wets the bed. My life is over. You know, yes, I'm in this movie with my brother, but like my brother's a star. And like, I'm just always going to remember it as a kid who wets the bed and like looks at the camera weird. But no, he's doing great.
He killed it.
That's a transcending fucking story.
Yeah.
From Fuller to fucking, you know, Broadway and maybe not off Broadway.
I forget.
Glengarry, fucking Oscar, all that hit TV show. So I think Fuller, there's something in that name that's I don't know. There's something there. Have you experienced, we're turning into a smart question. We've talked about this. You were kind of like introverted, like in a big time way earlier in life.
Yeah.
And then you've kind of blossomed.
Yeah.
So I think there's something in the Fuller name. There's a parallel. You guys have a similar trajectory. Right?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
You were I wasn't a bedwetter, but...
No, I'm not saying you were.
But yeah, I was so shy about looking people in the eye that sometimes people thought I was blind.
When you do stand up, that if that is not something that you get sick of saying because you have to say it so often because it works so well, I would be very surprised. But that is something... Because I tell you to do stand up because I think you genuinely enjoy it. You know, I'm not just, you know... I think you'd be good at it. I think you'd like it. I've been around you enough to know that. But yeah, that is something that you have to say on stage a lot because it's so fucking funny that people genuinely thought you were fucking blind because you're so introverted. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
The truest things are always the funniest.
Yeah. And by the way, we are not exaggerating. This
is not. Nope.
People genuinely thought she was blind because she was so not looking
people. Is there something wrong with your eyes? I'm sorry, are you?
Yeah. But now you very clearly can see.
Yes, yeah. Now I don't have that. No one thinks I'm blind now or shy.
Okay, next stupid question. How many fingers am I holding up?
Four.
Yeah, see, she's not blind. You can see.
You're stupid.
Did you not see that coming?
I try not to think ahead too much with things like that.
Okay. When I first, before I knew you, like knew you proper, met you or whatever, she does her eye makeup, like very, like it's, you do like dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like and all that.
I do like a cat eye.
Yeah.
For so those like, of you into makeup.
When I first saw pictures of her and stuff, it was just like a straight line. Like it was just like there's in some pictures of you, it's just like, it's like a cartoon, you know?
okay.
No,
cool.
Then I saw you in person,
mm-hmm.
and then like it was like no, it looks fucking great.
I am not actually that photogenic. I'm not. I mean, my best friend, our friend Maya, is an amazing photographer. So luckily, I do have some good pictures of myself because of Maya. But I don't feel like I'm that photogenic. People consistently tell me I look better or hotter or whatever in person.
Well, I think part of it is that I think the you know, not to mansplain fucking cameras, but I think a lot is getting lost in the eye makeup for cameras, but you're not doing it for cameras, you're doing it for life, and it looks great and it looks perfectly great in life. It's just that in some settings with a camera, it can look like it's just like a straight black line, like right across. Like there's just no eye.
Oh my God. Well, we joke a lot also about how like when I laugh, my eyes just disappear. Like
yeah,
they just kind of disappear. Mm. Just thing. Runs in my family, my dad's side.
He's got no eyes.
It's like that. It's like they disappear when we laugh.
Yeah. All right. All right. I guess I don't think I have any more stupid questions. Oh no, I got a good one. Where's the clitoris? Where's
that? My God.
Where is it?
Okay, so
I keep hearing about it.
You go down to 125th and you take a left.
Okay, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, no. I have a feeling you're clear on that one.
You think I'm clear on it?
Probably. Just a hunch.
Is that the energy that I give? That I like know where it is?
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
That would be a fun game, is to look like a series of images of dudes and try and
he
peg.
Knows. He does not know.
Yeah.
Definitely does
and
not
see
know.
How close it gets to actual
He's
reality.
Close. He's close, but he doesn't know yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably do that. I could probably do that. I worked That's with more like thousands of people on sexuality stuff. Like, I could probably do that.
That's more like a joke than a reality thing, though, right? Like, the idea of somebody who genuinely doesn't know where it is. Like, I feel like culturally, it's been drilled into people's heads, right?
I think that it's rare. It's more rare now.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like, fucking 1700s, it was like,
yeah.
Who the fuck
It's
knows?
More rare now. Now it's more like, people seem to be clear where it is. They're just trying to figure out how to like use it best.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, that's like that's always the battle, right? Is the idea of because it doesn't that I mean look, I defend porn all day long, but part of the a genuine negative side of porn is that whatever is the in vogue thing in porn at that moment becomes how people treat each other's bodies in real life, because they just assume, oh, that's what works. Mm-hmm. Even if they know porn is like bullshit, like they just think, oh, that's the thing.
Where
to do.
They don't have any, there's nowhere else to be educated about what sex is.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so I don't blame them at all. It's just like, that's they see that and they're like, all right, that's the fucking thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Like I remember that there was a fucking thing for a while with like just slapping clits. Do you remember that in porn?
Yeah, I mean, I probably haven't watched as much porn as
most
dudes, but
every morning.
But yeah, I've definitely seen that.
I have my cup of coffee and I watch the latest porn.
Clit slapping.
No, that was a thing for a while, and then choking too. People know about how like that became very prevalent in porn.
Definitely,
but there was the clit slapping thing, and it was weird. It was like very, and it was very cartoonish slapping. Like it was very like. You know what I mean? Like it was.
It hurts me to think about it.
That was
honest.
A thing for a while, dude.
I just, yeah. It's
I
just like how you
that would
could
complain
be
about
using
guys doing that on dates.
The body.
Yeah.
How you could be utilizing and connecting with the body. Mm-hmm. Like the level of like art of it compared to porn, not my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Although I feel like it has its place in things. I just feel like all the other approaches to sex just need to be louder. Like
virtually everything has a place.
Yeah.
Artistically, sexually, whatever. It's just a
it would be rightly sized if like how sex can actually be was out there more, you know, then it wouldn't bother me so much.
Yeah, the people are most people's encounters with sex, if they wanna like if they want to have a sexual life, it's almost at the mercy in this weird way of complete strangers a lot of the times. And it's, all right, there's no real conversation beforehand of like what we're getting ourselves into. It's just, all right, I guess we're going to take all our clothes off and see what bullshit this guy thinks he thinks, or what this girl thinks she thinks, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just becomes a, oh, that's what you think that that is, on both sides. You know, guys, I think guys are a lot quieter about it with girls because they just feel like they feel so lucky that it's even happening in the first place that they don't want to jinx it or ruin it or ruin that. Whereas girls will talk a lot about that sort of thing and be like, what the fuck was that? Not necessarily to the guy necessarily, but to somebody.
Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately not.
Well, that's the thing too, is like, I think most incompatibilities can be worked through conversation. And that's the thing that's like so verboten.
That's the thing I'm trying to, that's the thing I work with women on the most.
Yeah.
Like in my coaching and teaching and stuff. Like,
it's treated so.
It's connecting to your desire and communicating it.
Nobody's fucking doing something because that's the only thing they want to do. It's because they think that that's going to work. And you explain to them like that's not going to work. Like, that's not, maybe it works for somebody, but it's not going to work for me, you know?
Yeah.
That's really all it comes down to.
Yeah.
This got deep at the end.
Yeah, really. I mean, we just like went into another like pocket. I don't even know. If this was an OM, I'd say we just went into some deep pocket.
We went into a pocket.
Clitoris just went in there, and it was like kind of rich and dark and sensory.
Dark and sensory.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Please, I'm going to do the outro now because like I always get annoyed with having to do the intros and the outros later. So I'm just going to do the outro. You're just going to be part of the outro. I'm starting this now. I'm just making the person a part of the outro. Okay. Thank you all for listening. Listen to Aubrey's podcast. Watch Aubrey. Look at her eyes closely and either agree with me or don't agree with me. She's dying right now. come up with your own decisions about.
Go for it. Give me your makeup feedback, I guess.
Okay. Aubrey's a beautiful lady, and she has a beautiful podcast, and she's a beautiful person inside and out. That's my endorsement. Put that on any book you ever write. All right. Thank you all for listening. If you want to support the show and the films I make, killthelionfilms.com, dollar a month goes to me directly. You know the drill. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know what? Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, no, thank you. Thank you. And thank you at home. But thank you. Thank you.